Today's Clinical Updates guest discloses that he is an investigator for Medtronic's Spiral Affirm trial. The relevant financial relationships have been mitigated. Other speakers, planners, and CME staff do not have any relevant financial relationships with ineligible companies to disclose.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining me today, along with my guest, Yaga Sain, whom is a CNA with cardiology, and we will be discussing updates in the management of hypertension. So, hello.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Sure, thank you for joining. And did I chop your name or did I say it right?
No, you said it right. Yaga Sain, nurse practitioner with general cardiology and runs the hypertension clinic with two of my colleagues, Jake Dutcher, Dr. Dutcher, and Dr. Schmidt with Schmidt. So,
okay, great. So, that was my first question. Ballpark, how long you been involved in cardiology / hypertension, and why did you end up doing that?
Well, I have been with general cardiology here in St. Cloud now for 10 years, and I mean, I am very thankful that I have a very good of nurturing providers that know how to scout talents and build talent. And hypertension, we have been doing now for over, I would say, 3 to 4 years, but formally started to develop our own hypertension clinic to meet the needs of our central care population, I mean, in St. Cloud and the surrounding areas to meet their hypertension need. Because, I mean, in the United States, we have almost 108 million people diagnosed with or are living with hypertension. And only about 24% of these people are controlled. So we, our geographical location and our population, our patient population is not any different. So we felt the need to establish a clinic to service our population.
So one of the questions, there's different ways to try and tackle this, which is a huge topic, but the first one is guidelines, right? You go to AHA and there's guidelines for people with hypertension, with diabetes, kidney disease, ventricular device, this and that, etc. But when it comes to the point, guidelines for the primary force, right? What are the guidelines that rule, would you say?
You know, one of the guidelines that we always looked at would be our American College of Cardiology and American Heart Association guidelines. You also have the JNC, the JNC. I mean, JNC 7, JNC 8, all those guidelines we also looked at. And talking about that also, you also have to worry about now the classification of hypertension, because now with normal blood pressure, we are talking about less than 180, systolic and diastolic less than 80. So you have now people that we used to call normal blood pressure. Now we call them elevated blood pressure.
What did you say for systolic?
A systolic, a normal systolic blood pressure now is less than 120.
Yeah,
120 and a less than, and a diastolic should be less than 80. So now, if somebody comes to see you now in clinic, and they have now before the normal, which was 120 to 129, and a diastolic of less than 80, now they are called elevated blood pressures.
Sure.
Now to diagnose hypertension. Now we diagnose hypertension in two. You have stage one hypertension, which is 130 to one systolic of 130 to 139, or a diastolic of 80 to 90. That is stage one hypertension. Stage two hypertension will be anything greater than 140 systolic or greater than 90 diastolic.
Gosh, I think when I was doing my internal medicine residency, was the cutoff was at 140. So this is changing all the time. It's almost like a running joke in medicine. The question is, all these changes, I do infectious disease, so I wouldn't know, but I'm going to assume that it's based on populational studies with outcomes based on these new cutoffs, correct?
And that is very correct. I mean, what you are saying there, because now, if you look at your patient population, anybody 50 years and older with a systolic blood pressure greater than 140, has a higher risk of cardiovascular event. And when we are looking at cardiovascular event, we also have to look at, consider people with higher systolic pressure, patient will continue, oh, my blood pressure, systolic blood pressure is high. Oh, my diastolic blood pressure is high. Which one do I have to worry about? Well, anybody with a systolic blood pressure greater than 20 at the goal has a higher risk of cardiovascular event by almost 90% in their lifetime.
90% in their lifetime?
Yes.
Over 140?
Yeah, over 140, and then you have an additional 20. So we are talking about people at the age of 55 running around with systolic blood pressure of 160. Mm-hmm. Their risk of cardiovascular event increase almost by 90% during their lifestyle.
I don't know if this may be perhaps a fair question for a cardiologist who's probably 90 years old now, but okay, these things were happening when, I mean, because 20 years ago plus, 30 years ago, the cutoff was 140 over 90, but the outcomes were probably the same. I mean, the humans haven't changed much, so why were we missing that people over 140 had these horrible outcomes that now we are getting more strict about, or we knew and didn't act upon it?
I think it's more about awareness. I think we have also people that are living longer. So we are, and now with modern medicine, we can follow people for a long time and seeing what the outcomes are. Mm-hmm. And I think the more awareness that we are dealing with, having these people know what the risks are, people living longer, we are seeing, okay, we need to really bring down this blood pressure so we will also have a better outcome. And additionally too, we have more people coming in with more comorbidities, and this is where it is going to also be very important with our diabetic people, our chronic kidney disease people, mm-hmm. to say, okay, we really need to bring these blood pressures down so we will not have those organ damage at the long run. So I think people living longer, that's the reason why we are seeing more and changing our guidelines. Because as you know, in medicine, there is nothing that is stagnant. There is constant research, and we are seeing things better.
Sure. So let's start with an easy, straightforward, right?
Yes.
Is there a role to tell somebody, lose some pounds, I'll see you in a year or so, change your diet? Is that still scientifically acceptable for a certain subset of patients?
Yes. Those are going to be my young people, my under 18-year-olds that will come in and say, okay, you know, they are a little bit overweight, mm-hmm. and their blood pressures are maybe around 130, 135. You look at them, they have no other comorbidities. They have no kidney disease. They are non-diabetic. They are just, you know, hypertension is the only thing that you are seeing at that moment. You know, they are a little bit overweight, then you tell them, why not we try a lifestyle modification, because this can really help lower your pounds a little bit.
What if somebody is 30 and the same scenario?
30, again, with the same scenario, without any underlying health problem, if they come with a blood pressure of 135, 140, mm-hmm. you know, again, this is where we need to really know what is going on, because to diagnose hypertension, you need to have at least 2 consecutive blood pressure reading. Sure. If it is truly true, and you have to just have a frank discussion with that patient, do you think we can do lifestyle modification? Because it is documented that by reducing your weight, your body mass index, you can actually reduce your systolic blood pressure between 5 to 20 points. Just by decreasing 10 kilograms, if you that would be times 2.2. So by decreasing about a little bit over 20 pounds of your weight, you can have a systolic blood pressure decrease anywhere between 5 to 20 points. That is good. You go to your lifestyle modification diet again. DAS diet, following that, you can have about 8 to 14 points subtracted from your top systolic number. So these are things that are feasible. But if knowing your patient is all about building rapport and knowing your patient, these are people that I will say, can we consider maybe force agent therapy by starting them on tireside diuretic? Is your goal number one to go to and see if that's going to help? Again, it depends on the individual.
And then if you lose weight, great, we can take the other medication. So it sounds like it is 1 millimeter of mercury per pound, kind of, that you could lose, ideally.
Yes.
And if I hear in between the lines, I mean, within reason, it's not about the age, but the overall health. If you have somebody with a BMI of 28 and the blood pressure is 140 and this person is 50 and has nothing else, you might say, okay, we can try a little bit before we jump to meds. That wouldn't be a crazy statement, or you would?
Yes, I mean, that will not be a crazy statement. I mean, it's all, again, we just have to look at the patient holistically and see if they have any underlying medical problems. If they don't have any underlying medical problem, that's the first time they see you. Again, this is where you build that rapport and tell them, okay, your blood pressure today in clinic is 150 over 70. Some people will tell you, oh, I have white coat syndrome. I always tell them, that is okay, but I'm going to give you 1 week. When you are at home, I want you to check your blood pressure every day, 2 times a day. Make sure you sit down 5 minutes before you check that blood pressure. Make sure you are in a very relaxed and comfortable environment and give me those blood pressures. At the end of the week, if I looked at it and you are still elevated at home, I am going to start you on medication.
So there are multiple varieties, but let's say, for a person without major associated comorbidities, what is the number go-to drug?
What is the number one go-to? We should always start with our diuretics, and the thiazide diuretics has always been the number one for most people. Mm-hmm. So hydrochlorothiazide, 12.5, start with that, or 25, start with that.
Okay.
If they are over 20 points, the goal, so that's the time when you are going to consider 2-drug regimen therapy. Okay, now, this is where I know there is so many things about racism in medicine, which is one of the areas too. But if these people are Caucasian that comes with 20 points above goal, so I'm going to start them on a thiazide diuretic, maybe a hydrochlorothiazide, before I go to the big gunner, clothalidone. I'll start them on a low dose and then start them on, let's say, ACE or ARB.
This is for white people.
This is for white people.
Okay.
And if they are black descent, I'll start them on thiazide diuretic and a calcium channel blocker. And again, our calcium channel blocker, we're talking about the amlodipine or the nifedipine. So I tend to reserve people things like the diltiazem, the verapamil. I avoid those medications because of the bradycardia that comes with that.
So the second drug is based on race. For black is calcium channel blocker. For white is?
I'll go the ACE and the ARB.
Okay.
I have to clarify this thing too. Sometimes the black people now, if they come and I know, okay, they have maybe an underlying proteinuria, they have an underlying diabetes, I may not go to the calcium channel blocker. Instead, I'll go to the ARB and take care of that. And again, we come back now to our cardiology area. They have underlying coronary artery disease. They have cardiomyopathy. So all these things are going to factor on how you are going to treat these people.
Sure. So what patients, because hypertension is bread and butter for primary care.
Yes.
What patients should they send to you? And is there a role to send to nephrology instead of to you for hypertension? I would guess it's recalcitrant hypertension. What patients should you be seeing?
Well, I think now you want to get me into trouble because maybe you don't know, but my wife is a nephrology nurse practitioner. So we always have to fight. So if I tell you that you should not send those patients to nephrology when I go home, I'll be in.
We'll make sure we don't send these to her. She won't have access to this recording. Don't worry.
Yes. Anyway, so number one, what I always like to tell people, and I know primary care always, they do an excellent job taking care of hypertensive patients. Let's try and rule out people first, secondary hypertension.
Mm-hmm.
You make sure that those things are out of the way, because that is something also sometimes we forget that there are other things that can cause hypertension.
Like you mean like renal artery sclerosis or things
like
that?
Yes, all those things. And also even sometimes the medications that we give these people, the oral contraceptives, the NSAIDs, alcohol, and also some of our diet pills, all these things cause hypertension, steroids. So everything being equal, if all these things are ruled out, and now you are dealing with, let's say now, okay, this is my third, fourth drug therapy, including a diuretic. So we are talking about now resistant hypertension.
Two drugs you're talking about.
Yeah, three drugs. If you are dealing with three drugs, one of which including a diuretic, now we are dealing with resistant hypertension. Mm-hmm. If you cannot control us, send these people to us, and then we are going to do also, we will do secondary hypertension workup if you don't have time, and then go from there, because sometimes we have to deal with renal artery stenosis. These are people that will have to evaluate to a CT and try to fix those blockage. And we have tremendous good results when we see people like this. And then other things too, we have now new therapies like renal denervation, where we go in and burn the renal nerves, and that way try to lower people's, interrupt that nervous symptom signal from the kidneys to the brain, disrupt those nerve patterns and lower people's blood pressures. So we have things, we are evolving in hypertension management every day.
And do you see pediatrics too?
No, we don't see, unfortunately, pediatrics.
What happens with pediatrics, do you know?
So if you have people with hypertension that are pediatric, those are people that need detailed workup, and sometimes some of it could be caused by coarctation and things like that, structural disease. And usually Mr. Martin, Dr. Martin, Chief Martin, and Xavier, those are the people that see these pediatric people with hypertension. Usually their hypertension sometimes are related to structural.
So looks like I have to wrap it up now. Anything else? So if I understand correctly, refer to recalcitrant cases. We have a running hypertension clinic. What's your wait time, would you say, for patients? Do you have any idea?
You know, it is, we try to get people as much as possible. We try to get people within 1 to 2 weeks.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and truly speaking, sometimes if we really not know that this patient needs our service, my nurses are very excellent. They will reach out to them. We can even start therapy before we see you, just to avoid those end organ problems and unnecessary ER visits.
Do you know or suspect that you are underused?
You know, I would not say that because we are very busy, but again, we are here to serve our population. We'll do anything to serve them. So we welcome consults. We welcome to see people because our goal is to take care of our people. Our goal is to avoid the strokes. Our goal is to avoid renal damage. Our goal is to avoid retinal damage because of hypertension.
Can't argue with that. Anything else you would like to add?
Oh, thank you for giving us the opportunity to come and talk to you today.
Of course. Well, thank you for joining. This was Yaga Sen, who works in cardiology, hypertension, and is ready to see your recalcitrant patients or the patients with recalcitrant hypertension, whatever you prefer.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.